May it please the court, Cynthia Harvey on behalf of the defendant appellant, Mr. Nguyen. There is really one overriding issue that I would like to focus on with regard to Mr. Nguyen's appeal, and that is that time elapsed should not bar Mr. Nguyen's ability to challenge an unconstitutional conviction where he filed five pro se pleadings within the time allotted. He was appointed counsel, and then court error and attorney error resulted in his supplemental motion being filed beyond the three-year time limit. Mr. Nguyen began filing motions within 3 months of the mandate. He requested trial transcripts, he requested counsel be appointed, and he also raised several specific allegations of ineffective assistance of counsel. At no time did Mr. Nguyen ever indicate that he did not wish to pursue his post-conviction claims.
Counsel, the November 94 motion was the first one he filed, right?
Correct.
It was denied by the court?
The transcripts, yes.
Okay. You contend that was a Rule 35 motion?
I contend, I'm not sure if that one contained allegations of ineffective assistance of counsel or not. However, subsequent ones.
But the November 94 motion, it was never appealed. So you're not raising that with us now, are you?
Actually, I don't believe that I can because I believe the law in Colorado is that a denial for a motion for transcripts is not a final appealable order.
Right. The June 95 motion, that was denied by the court, right?
The first one was denied, yes.
In June 95?
However, the court granted leave to renew the motion requesting counsel and stated that he would appoint counsel.
But the order by the court was never appealed.
And again, I don't believe that there was a right to appeal the denial of the transcripts.
So if either of those motions are Rule 35s, they're not, even if they were timely filed, they're over with, they're finished, aren't they?
The allegations contained in those motions, if they are 35C, motions in addition to motions for trials were pending. They hadn't been acted on, but
the motions were denied.
The portion relating to transcripts was denied. There was no order relating to the ineffectiveness claims until June of 2004 in response to the supplemental motion. And in July of 1995, the court appointed an attorney to Mr. Nguyen. However, the court used the language for appellate purposes only. That was well within the time limit for Mr. Nguyen to have an attorney prepare a supplemental 35C motion on his behalf. However, there's indication in the record that either the public defender's office misplaced the appointment or didn't find it and therefore did not realize that they had been appointed for appellate purposes. Once they realized the court's error, they contacted Mr. Nguyen, and I believe that contact was the result of a letter from Mr. Nguyen, because that's what the letter states, and told him that he needed to request counsel again because they didn't have authority to act because of the appellate purposes language. The effect of the appellate purposes language seems to be inadvertent and a mistake by the trial court, because in the July 95 order, the court specifically told Mr. Nguyen that he would appoint counsel for his post-conviction proceedings. There was nothing pending on appeal in July of 1995, so it appears that the court simply made a mistake. Once the public defender's office was reappointed in 1997, they requested transcripts on Mr. Nguyen's behalf, and that was February of 98, and 6 months after that, approximately summer of 98, they filed a motion to withdraw. A month after that, alternate defense counsel was appointed, and a year after that, she filed her supplemental 35C motion. After she filed that motion...
So can you tell me now what timely filed Rule 35C motion, do you contend, is before us now?
I contend that the substance of the pro se motions that Mr. Nguyen filed, particularly when analyzing the facts under the case that the state relies on, the Valdez case, were sufficient to commence the action. He obviously needed the assistance of counsel and transcripts to be able to draft a detailed supplemental motion.
So the 94 motion, the 95, 94 motion.
Each of the pro se motions that mention specific ineffectiveness claims. I believe there was one of those pro se motions that did not, but that the rest did.
Well, they mentioned his intent to file ineffective assistance claims.
Correct, which under
suggesting that he knew the difference.
Correct, but under Valdez, that's sufficient. A letter that didn't allege any ineffectiveness claims was sufficient to commence the post-conviction proceedings timely. And much like in this case, what happened was that the public defender's office caused a delay, and so the supplemental motion was not filed in Valdez. I believe it was 7 years past the date. But complicating matters in Mr. Nguyen's case was the error by the district court in appointing his attorney. That error should not result in a waiver of Mr. Nguyen's post-conviction counsel. If the state's argument is taken to its logical conclusion, which is that because of the error in appointment, Mr. Nguyen didn't actually have an attorney representing him, when the whole time the court and Mr. Nguyen clearly believed that an attorney had been appointed, that would result in a waiver, and that shouldn't be the rule.
Did he file any motion about the, what do you call, the error in the appointment of counsel?
Mr. Nguyen was not aware of the error. He believed that counsel had been appointed. His letter to the court and his later motions asking for someone other than a public defender show that he believed he had an attorney appointed. And in fact, the judge who made the appointment didn't catch the error either. It wasn't until after that judge retired, a new judge took over, and a new request for the attorney to do something was submitted to the court realized the problem. That was also the same time frame that the public defender sent a letter revealing the problem with the appellate purposes only language.
Well, Ms. Harvey, would it be inappropriate to suggest that in order to avoid the time strictures of Rule 35C, that you have to hang your hat on the fact that this was a supplement?
I'm not sure I understand your question entirely, but if you assume that the motions were pro se motions weren't 35Cs, are you asking that we then need the supplement to be deemed timely?
Basically, your argument, as I understand it, or maybe it's incorrect, that what was subsequently filed years later was a supplement to the original motion, because it was too late to file a so-called new 35C.
That's correct. She did file that motion as a supplement.
And
to the
position that it's a supplement to the old motion and not a new request. Is that correct?
Correct. Okay. And if it's deemed a new request, then it's also my argument that Mr. Nguyen can establish justifiable excuse because he wasn't responsible for the errors that had occurred.
But that was a reasonable excuse for filing beyond the statutory period under Rule 35C.
That is correct. The appellate purposes only appointment, the delay by the public defender's office, and the fact that as soon as Ms. Sussman was appointed, she submitted that supplemental pleading in a timely manner.
This Valdez case you're referring to is not cited in your brief, is it?
It's in the answer brief.
In the reply brief?
And in the reply brief. And the Valdez case, it was factually kind of similar in that Mr. Valdez submitted a letter to the court stating that he was unable to prepare a 35C and requesting that counsel be appointed.
What do you mean when you say kind of similar? What is that supposed to indicate?
That it's factually similar to what happened in the Nguyen case with the public defender error and the initiating or commencing of the 35C proceedings on something other than a full-blown motion under Form 4. If there are no further questions, I would like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
You have about 4 minutes and 30 seconds.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm Matthew Holman and I represent the people in this matter. I think the court's well aware, there are two basic issues in this case. One is can the 1999 35C motion called a supplemental motion relate back to those earlier motions for requests for transcripts? And I think that's the first question. I think that one's pretty straightforward and I will talk about it for a minute, but the answer I think is no, it doesn't relate back for several reasons. The second question that's a little more complicated is the one about if it's not timely, is there justifiable excuse or excusable neglect for the late filing? I just want to touch briefly on the first question about the whether the 1999 motion is timely, and it's not for several reasons. One is, I think, as one of the judges pointed out, those motions for transcripts are not raising 35C claims. They clearly indicate that what they want are transcripts in order to prepare a 35C motion. So I don't think they, in their substance, constitute 35C motions.
Was there any part of those motions that was not resolved by the trial court's rulings on those motions, as Ms. Harvey suggests, that there's something left over?
No, I thought of a second reason, but for the principal reason is what they are is motions requesting transcripts, and that was denied. And the court said the defendant's on a fishing expedition. One of those things, a fishing expedition, and there's just no basis for the transcripts. I think to the extent the defendant's contending that it somehow encompassed 35C, I think we can rely on sort of a standard proposition of law, which is where the court denies a motion without qualification, it is a denial of all claims therein. And so to the extent the defendant would claim that those were actually a 35C motion, his time to deal with that was through an appeal from those denials.
And once they were denied, what was there to supplement?
Nothing, Your Honor. And I think that's the other problem. And actually, I mentioned it in the brief, although I don't think we get that far, that one of the problems then the defendant has is if they're going to stand the ground that these were 35Cs that were denied on the claims that are now raised in the supplemental motion, they have issues of finality and failure to appeal and successiveness that they have to overcome. I think, but I think those motions just weren't 35C motions. The other, I guess, couple of points I want to make about that is, even if they were somehow considered 35Cs, this court's opinion in People versus Ambos essentially says that a defendant's not entitled to raise conclusory insufficient claims in a timely 35C and then years later file a supplemental motion to actually raise arguably sufficient claims and thereby deem them timely. So I don't think under either approach, whether the court agrees with the defendant that they're 35Cs or not, that they get to relate them back to the earlier motions.
And the supplement was more than 3 years after those were filed anyway.
Yes, that's correct. And well beyond the I'm looking at the time frame here, I have it written down.
97, I think.
Yeah, it was the deadline, August 1797, and this was 99, so a couple of years beyond the three-year period. The justifiable excuse or excusable neglect question is more interesting, although ultimately I think the trial court's application of law here was correct, and I have to say up front, I have a little bit of personal sympathy for the defendant, but under the law, he had the duty to pursue these claims within the time period. as the court found, there wasn't anything that prevented him from either pursuing them or from contacting the public defender well within the time frame if he in fact thought that they were representing him in the post-conviction motion. And consequently, he's not excused from that. And I just want to stop and mention that the court's order, although it may seem peculiar to the defense, that counsel was being appointed for appellate purposes only, it may be that the court thought that the defendant was going to appeal from these prior motions. And whether that was a correct, and I agree that you can't appeal from a denial of a transcript, but maybe perhaps the court thought that. So to say that it was completely erroneous, I think, is speculating about what the court intended. But the bottom line is, it's what the order said, and the defendant received it, and he was on notice that that was the scope of the appointment. And as you can see from the record, he files several motions about what he thinks are conflicts with the public defender or not. He's very well-skilled at filing motions and getting them before the court on issues. And he's got some obligation, if he thinks that's not what he wanted, to ask for something else.
From January 96 to October 97, he filed nothing. A year and 10 months, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Do we have any indication of whether that somehow supports his claim for excusable neglect? What happened during that time?
I don't think it's clear, and I think the trial court pointed that out in their order, was that there isn't any showing of whether the defendant tried at all to get in touch with the public defender. There's just no indication whatsoever that they did that until well after the time had expired. And of course, it is his burden to present that evidence in support of his claim. And I think that's the real problem he has to overcome. And again, as the court pointed out, it's very easy to send a letter to the public defender's office and say, "You're my counsel. What are you doing?" And seek them out. I think it's funny. I was thinking about this getting ready. When we read appellate records, often, of course, the defendant is sitting at defense table and not saying anything on the record. And I guess somehow we get this impression that it all goes on around a defendant without their participation. But in fact, of course, we know that they're expected to hire counsel to discuss with them their claims. If they feel, as in the case before, that there's some, you were talking about conflicts, if they think there's a conflict, they're expected to, and this defendant did here, we expect them to participate. And once counsel is appointed for some purpose, whatever it might be, it's not a light switch that simply turns off the defendant's responsibility to actively participate in his case. And he certainly here, he wasn't appointed post-conviction counsel, and his waiting, he's, you know, on notice, he's presumed to know the law that the time is running for the 3 years, and he has some duty to pursue those claims or try to get, if he thinks this counsel's representing him, to get them to address that. I don't think I have anything else specifically to touch on unless there's any questions from the court. I would thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Holman. Ms. Harvey?
Thank you. I would just briefly like to address the Ambos case relied on by the people deals with successive, fully litigated, and appealed 35Cs, which were actually entirely new proceedings. It doesn't deal with a situation with more than one pro se pending or potentially pending 35Cs and a supplement.
But the point of the case that conclusory allegations don't suffice to satisfy Rule 35C, that applies in any situation. What's
it does, but there was never any ruling by the court. So if those can be considered 35Cs, then the court should have denied those claims if it chose to for that basis, which it did do later in June of 2004 on the supplement. As far as the appellate purposes only language, the court very clearly told Mr. Nguyen in its 1995 order, July 5, 95, that the other defendants in this case have requested and have appointed to them court-appointed counsel to represent them. The court would do the same for this defendant if so requested. if an attorney represented the defendant, all transcripts and records would be available in the regular course of business. So to argue that this was somehow an appellate purposes appointment because the court thought that Mr. Wynn was going to appeal the non-appealable motions for transcript seems to me not forthright.
But the court denied the motion.
The court granted this motion.
The court denied his 1995 motion.
Well, the court denies the defendant's motion and grants the defendant leave to renew the motion if an attorney is appointed.
Okay.
And then on July of 95, the 18th, the court does appoint an attorney, only the court mistakenly appoints for appellate purposes only. There was nothing pending, and there was nothing to appeal if the court only ruled on the motions for transcripts. That's not a final appealable order. Presumably, the court would have acted in a reasonable manner and appointed counsel that he told the defendant he would appoint. So the language that he used was simply mistaken. Additionally, under justifiable excuse and excusable neglect, this was a person who was illiterate and Vietnamese. He had been appointed an interpreter for trial and for his appeal, and the court was aware of, well, the first judge was aware of this. Also attached was an affidavit by the interpreter detailing the issues that Mr. Nguyen had with the English language and the Vietnamese language.
The 99 motion.
Correct.
Supplement.
Correct. The 99 supplement contained the affidavit of the interpreter.
So who wrote all these motions in 94, 95, 96, 97 if he was illiterate and didn't speak Vietnamese?
We all know that there's jailhouse attorneys.
They must have quit.
But my last point I'd like to address very briefly is that in the Valdez case, where the record, like here, didn't show what happened during those two-year period, it was blank, the court held that in order to allow that passage of time and potentially a bar to the post-conviction motion, a remand would be necessary so that there could be a record to determine whether or not the defendant had failed to proceed as he should have. I would argue that in this case, at a minimum, if we have the same situation where we don't know what happened during the two-year time frame, at a minimum, the case should be remanded so that a record can be made to determine whether or not Mr. Valdez or Mr. Nguyen did take any necessary steps or did try to communicate with the public defender's office.
The 99 counsel was pretty thorough, as I recall what she did. Did she indicate in any way, offer any evidence that he attempted to contact the public defender in that, I'd call it about less than two-year period?
The 99 counsel wrote her motion as a supplement. Therefore, she did not allege any ineffectiveness. Once that was raised, and it was raised the morning the hearing was to occur on the merits of the 35C, there was a week's continuance, and the record at the December 17th hearing is silent as to what occurred. So there is no way to know without a remand.
She didn't offer any letters, affidavits, anything that Mr. Nguyen attempted to get the public defender to take some action during that roughly 19-20 month period.
She did not, but I don't believe she had enough opportunity in that five-day time period to have done any of those things. I see that my time is up.
Thank you, Ms. Harvey.
Thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Holman, for your arguments. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course. That completes our 1:30 docket, and the bailiff may announce a recess. Thank you.